Welcome to a new series of Booked, a push and shove through the jumble sale of literature. We've been queuing in Ilkley since sunrise, and we're on the hunt for carrier bags full of bargains from the Ilkley Literature Festival. But first, a poem. It's called Part of Ilkley Moor Batat, rendered as the lyrics to the new Andrew Lloyd Webber musical, Moor. This duck tastes like you, my darling. This duck tastes like you. Ooh, 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 ooh. This duck tastes like you. So, fighting for trinkets with determined faces and sharpened winkle pickers are regulars Mark Thomas and Roger McGough. And elbowing for the first stalls and retro jumpers are Dilly Keane and new boy wonder performance poet Rory Motion. So, let's stuff our pockets with nylon socks and kipper ties and rush to the first round. Each panellist will find in front of them a pack of cards. What they have to do is describe what's written on the card to their teammate without using any proper names or words on the card. Once the partner's guessed it, they move on to the next card. You can pass on one card, and the object is to get as many as you can in 1 minute. So, Roger and Mark, off you go, and yours are bookish musical instruments.
This is a biddly-diddy-diddy, and it's played by a bloke with a red hat.
Trumpet.
Red hat, little bell goes around, Enid Blyton, beep beep.
Not his car. Bell horn, the horn, motor horn, not his car.
Beep beep
beep. Beep beep, the horn.
It's a trumpet.
Trumpet. Oh, this is the cat and the... Goes
fiddle,
through.
Fiddle.
Thank
fiddle.
You.
Fiddle.
Yes.
Yeah, all
yes.
Right then. The detective, Baker Street, used to play it when he got...
The
really,
violin.
Yeah, lovely.
Yes. This is... In the Wind of the Willows, that very sad bit where they go off, the otter goes off into
30
the,
seconds.
And the pan comes down and he plays the...
accordion.
No.
Pan, pipe.
Pipes, pipe. Good boy, good boy. Smokes a pipe.
This
pipe,
is...
Yeah.
Sheriff of Nottingham's friend. No, evil, right. But... No, the bloke who didn't like the Sheriff of Nottingham.
Robin Hood?
Yeah, and he had a...
horn.
Yeah, lovely.
Very good. And this
five
is... That Australian, that New Zealand film... It's landed up on the beach. Lies on the beach and Jan it's Campion.
Piano.
Yes,
piano.
Good. Yes.
Very good.
Right, this is...
We're finished now. Time to... And you got none wrong. So, Dilly and Rory, it's your go. You've got famous literary religious types. Are you ready? Off you go.
Yes, this is a person of the class, one of those, and up here in this part of the world.
Vicar.
Yes, of?
Bray, Wakefield.
Yes! Well done, that woman in the audience.
This bloke, he had a really nice sort of brown thing and he used to hang around in the woods. With a band of rebels who didn't...
Oh, Friar Tuck.
Very one.
I did say that the wrong way around. The other one was the famous Oscar Wilde, and he was in the play about the baby in the handbag, and he said, "My sermon on the meaning of the manor and the wilderness can be adapted to almost any occasion, joyful or as nest." No, it's lost on you.
I haven't got a clue. But I enjoyed it. I enjoyed it.
And he proposes to Miss Prism.
I haven't got a clue.
Dr. Chasuble.
He's not big in Ilkley.
10 seconds.
Well, this bloke who was in the biggest show. Shakespearean love story that you ever did have?
Midsummer Night's Dream. He's Romeo and Juliet.
Five seconds.
The Friar and Romeo.
What was his name?
Friar Lawrence.
Yeah.
Time's up, I'm afraid. And you've got them almost all right. Father Brown. And now, beginnings and endings, heads to tail, top to bottom, tip to toe. In this round, we've asked our panellists to come up with new beginnings and endings for well-known works of literature. Sounds easy? Well, try it for yourself. Rory, which book have you rewritten?
I've written the poem Jerusalem from the extended version of Milton. And I don't know if anyone knows, but Willie Blake, he didn't just do things about stripy tigers and hit songs for the Women's Institute. And I thought he might have rewritten Jerusalem... for Swampy. So here we go. And did those feet in ancient Doc Martens walk beneath England's mountains green? And was the hole he dug quite long? Under England's pleasant pastures, unseen. And did his countenance, begrimed, shine forth on Have I Got News For You? And was the A30 still builded here among those dark, satanic, out-of-town shopping centres? Now, I'll go to the ending now, but The only little middle bit I've left out is only two lines, so I'll read it to you anyway. Bring me my bow of burning gold. Bring me my arrows of desire. Bring me my spear and Jackson. Oh, clods unfold. Bring me three blankets, a torch, a flask of barley cup and a really good long book. I will not cease from environmental strife, nor shall my spade sleep in my hand, till we have stopped building those polyester nightmare jungles where the mute howl of frozen fish finger agony pierces the groaning slabs of suffocating retail neon nothingness in England's green and pleasant land.
And Mark, what's your new start and finish?
Heart of Darkness, Joseph Conrad. I was reading this the other day and I suddenly thought, this is awful. It genuinely is, because the whole premise of the book is basically that colonialism is bad because, and the invasion of Africa is bad because it killed one white bloke who went a bit potty in the jungle. And that's kind of a bad premise for me. So I thought, I'm going to rewrite this. So this is the beginning and ending of Heart of Darkness. Marlowe sat on the boat, lit his pipe and gazed out into the grey swell of the sea. I'm going to tell you a story, but it isn't the story you expect me to tell. You know the one, up the Congo, looking for a decent chap who might have gone potty. You know the one, normal white man's burden, upstanding European, corrupted by black savages in the dark continent. Well, to tell you the truth, he said, casually earmarking a page from E.P. Thompson's The Making of the British Working Class. To tell you the truth, I'm tired. I'm tired of being a narrator for an apologist for imperialism. You simply don't know what it's like. Nearly all the other characters in the world of literature won't talk to me. At best, they see me as an antiquated old fart. At worst, did you know that Mary Poppins called me a lackey for the running dogs of colonialism? She did. Even characters from Geoffrey Archer novels think I'm a little right wing for their liking. So I'm going to tell you a different tale, another journey. He broke off and lit his pipe. This time, he said, this time the journey is slightly nearer home. And this is the end bit. As the day broke, we made our final miles upstream through a clinging morning mist, so dense you could hardly see in front of you. The helmsman, who is exceptionally white, even for a white fellow, was virtually engulfed in the lily-like mist. Indeed, if it wasn't for his blue eyes and the gaps in his teeth, he wouldn't have been visible at all. Had he blinked and shut his mouth, he would have disappeared altogether. A bird's screech suddenly cut the silence, and as the boat moved to a mooring through the pale, murky vision, a spire loomed. A clock chimed loudly, and the boatmen fearfully huddled together, chatteringly urgent, in a dialect I could not understand, but I managed to catch the words, Big Ben. Here on the banks of the Thames was the heart of darkness. The evil recess of the soul given form in bricks and mortar parliament. It was here that I would find Kurtz in the House of Lords. A place that literally stank of evil. No wonder we call it the Dark Incontinent. Hidden from view, we observed that the now Lord Kurtz had changed. He drank a vile local brew called port, and he hobbled with a stick. A group of lords began howling. A bewitching chant, a devil chant of unnatural powers, pounding again and again and again. Hear, 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 hear. Occasionally, one of the number would shriek over the throng, bring back hanging. And like a banshee wail, they don't understand the ways of the countryside. Suddenly, some kind of priest appeared, dressed in short trousers, holding a black rod, which he banged on the door. Immediately, these poor, uneducated animals flung themselves on the floor, bowing and groaning, supplicating themselves to their vile voodoo chief, who was muttering some kind of ritual prayer. My government will introduce the following. It was at that point that we broke cover and grabbed Kurtz. On board boat with him, we journeyed downriver, where I learnt a little of what had happened. Kurtz had traded with the locals, who have a curious system of exchange known as cash for questions. But all this would not benefit Kurtz now. He was dying.
In the half-light and haze of the Thames fog, his face awash with death sweat, glistening with sick fever, his racked and wretched voice croaked in my ear his last and final words. The dollar. The dollar. The dollar.
So let's move on to Vox Pops, which is Latin for getting your hands dirty. Yes, we asked our followers what they knew about certain famous authors, and we edited their recollections together. Our panellists have to guess which author they're describing. So, Roger and Mark, see if you can get this one.
He was really the toast of the town.
He was a very brilliant scholar, although
to a lot of people, he looked like a pillar of society.
He was a very good translator from Latin or Greek.
He won the Newdigate Prize.
He read fairy stories when he was a child, which reflected in his later work.
He had two children, I believe.
They were kind of cynical, but they also had a touch of innocence to all of them.
He actually made a very bad enemy.
Like the man himself.
He was a very good boxer.
His private life came to the fore.
Decadence with money was renowned.
Rather effete.
He moved out of his class.
Peculiarly coloured flowers.
Court case.
The children were never allowed to see their father again.
Spent most of his life trying to escape to the continent and died in Paris.
Yes, the Stephen Fry movie. Yes, it's Oscar Wilde, of course, wasn't it? I didn't know he won the Newdigate Prize, but then, yes.
I didn't know. He was a boxer.
Right, well.
Yes, I was there. He was a very good boxer. I thought, well, that's cool, isn't it?
Hmm. Yeah.
Because I'm sure that there must have been people at the time who thought, oh, good Lord, he's a homosexual, we won't talk to him. But then you think, oh, he's a boxer, easy, you know.
Oscar Wilde. So to beat that Rory and Dilly, you have to get this in 0.3 seconds.
He was a keen cyclist.
Most of his books are of a fairly tragic nature.
You've got quite a complex personal life.
But while he was an apprentice architect, he used to read books as he walked between his hometown and where he's apprenticed.
A lot of his characters had very complex personal lives.
And he spent a lot of time looking at paintings.
Very nostalgic.
He wanted to be remembered in the afternoon.
About simple working class people being at the mercy of the gods.
Descriptive. Without being verbose.
And desperately keen to become a cultured man.
This affected his health very badly.
He wrote over 1,000 poems.
He's one of the nature poets of his age.
One or two of which are remembered.
Towards the end of his life, he was quite a disappointed man because he felt that he hadn't been appreciated.
So.
Oh, a cyclist, an architect.
And an architect.
The complex lives of life of his himself. I don't know. I mean, I'd take a punt at Hardy.
Thomas Hardy, yes, it was. So tell us how he got to that. You didn't say which Hardy, though. Do you mean Frank Hardy?
Yes. No, because the poetry. And
cyclist?
No, I had no idea he was a cyclist. I had no idea he was an architect. It was just, I thought, they're trying to put us off the scent, and he's not as famous now for his poetry as he was in his life. He was much more famous as a poet.
So Hardy was a cyclist, and Oscar Wilde was a boxer. Mm. You learn some stuff on this show, don't you? And now to an old favourite, conversation consequences. In this round, literary characters bump into each other, like ships that pass in the night or ducks that bob in the bath. So, Dilly, who bobbed in the bath for you?
Well, my bath was very busy because I had a cast of several. I had Don Giovanni, from Don Giovanni by Mozart, who was meeting the very model of a modern major general from The Pirates of Penzance by Gilbert and Sullivan in Outpatients. Now, if you've ever seen Gilbert and Sullivan, the major general also has 24 daughters. So the cast is as follows. Volunteering for the very difficult part of Don Giovanni is opera lover Mark Thomas, and I shall be playing the major general. And my daughters are to be played by the lissom Roger, the lovely Ian, and the shapely Rory. So we're just going to get to our places now. Thank you. And they're in the outpatients department of the local hospital. Thank you.
Oh, dear. I am alone here in this waiting room. And now I must see il dottore Allegro. My malady is such that I cannot stand it any longer. Soon I will be morte. But stay! Who have we here? Who is the man followed by so many totti bellissimi? I will hide behind this convenient place pillar to discover the secret. A che bella, a che bella, a che bella.
I am the very model of a modern major general. I've information vegetable, animal, and mineral. My 24 daughters are a proof of my virility, and I depend upon them to care for me through senility. I kept them in a convent so that I could guard their innocence. But sadly for their father, not a one has got a grain of sense. That's why I'm in this clinic, for as any clever egg can see, each and every one is in the latest stage of pregnancy.
Each and every one is in the latest stage of pregnancy. Each and every one is in the latest stage of pregnancy. Each and every one is in the latest stage of breaking pregnancy.
I know a lot. I know a lot of things about the labors of poor Hercules. I'll show you calinetic exercises that'll work your knees. I've eaten rice in China and in Texas buns with burgers on. I've dallied with Diana and had fun with Sarah Ferguson. But all my knowledge cannot show who put my daughters up the spout. And if I find the bastard, I will jolly well punch his lights out. For due to the philandering of some womanizing tosspot, all my girls are at this antenatal clinic in the hospital. In short, in matters vegetable, animal, and mineral, I am the very model of a harassed major general.
In short, in matters vegetable, animal, and mineral, he is the very model of a harassed major general.
Adieu.
Who goes there?
It is I, Don Giovanni.
No, no.
No, no.
Si, si.
Si, si.
No, no.
No, no.
Si, si.
Yes, yes.
Oh, this isn't getting us anywhere. I do want to know who you are spying on us like that.
I am the padre of all the bambini carried by Ophelia. Ophelia, Ophelia, oh, how I love Ophelia. That's a very old joke with an Italian twist on it. Yes, I confess, it is I who have put these buns in the oven.
My goodness, there's enough buns to open a bakery. Explain yourself, varlet, and then prepare to die.
Okie dokie, it goes like this. La Donna Mobile, that's the wrong opera, but it's a nicer tune than anything Mozart wrote. Your daughters, they are fickle, they like to slap and tickle. If they are in a pickle, they are to blame. So, you are the very model of a modern major general. You've information, vegetable, animal, and mineral. In this affair, however, you've been showing off your ignorance. I led your girls a dance, maybe, but they led me a bigger dance. And when you hear the truth, I know your honor will be satisfied. Your daughters have made sure my goose is cooked, my fat is fried. And after I have pleasured them, I had to call our frolics off. The eating was so terrible it nearly took my bollocks off. The eating was so terrible it nearly took his bollocks off. The eating was so terrible it nearly took his bollocks off. The eating was so terrible it nearly took his bollocks off.
In short, in matters vegetable, animal, and mineral, your daughters have all given me a nasty bug venereal.
In short, in matters vegetable, animal, and mineral, your daughters have all given him a nasty bug venereal.
So, Roger, what are your conversation consequences?
Yeah, well, you know the wonderful book, The Naming of the Rose? So I imagine all the characters in Naming of the Rose, all these wonderful singers, I assume they all could sing Gregorian chant. So the choir from the Gregorian, from The Naming of the Rose, going down the high street in Toy Town and meeting Mr. Plod.
Excuse us, could you direct us to the Abbey?
The Abbey, certainly, gents. Now,
Carry on straight down the high street. And just you be careful about Noddy and his brand new car. Got no road sense, that lad. You go past Big Ears House. You can't miss it. It's got a large T-shaped door. And then you throw a left at the Balti House. And then it's straight on as far as you can past the Toy Town Massage Parlour.
Thank you.
And now, step with me into the cupboard under the stairs. To the dusty hell that we call the Hoover bag. Sorry, the black bag. In front of each panellist is a black bag. In this black bag are three objects. Each panellist has to slide their hands bravely into the bag, feel the objects with courage, and then lucidly describe what they think the objects may be, and then see and try and determine which book the three objects symbolise. So, Dilly, place your hand inside the black bag.
I'm placing my hand now inside this raven-coloured bag. And, ooh, there's something... cloth. Some little clothy thing. Ooh, it's a little pochette, is it? Then there's a plastic bag, which is a small plastic bag, and it is rectangular in shape, and it's all folded over, and there's something squishy-squashy inside. So, and it's got a bit of sellotape.
What about the bigger of the three objects?
Is it a corset?
Yes.
Ooh, it's a corset, a plastic bag, and a bag.
What's in the bag, the little plastic bag? The stuff that was squishy-squashy?
It sort of comes apart. It's got a baccy, is it?
Yes, it is, tobacco.
Oh, right.
So it's a corset.
Tobacco, a corset, and a bag.
Pocket.
It's a pocket, is it?
It is a pocket.
Oh, no, I don't know. I give in.
All right. The audience know. What about, I mean, the corset, and then there's, it's actually a packet of golden Virginia tobacco. That might give you a clue.
Oh, is it Gone with the Wind or something like that? No, then I don't know.
The golden Virginia.
Who's afraid of golden Virginia?
No, it was... it was actually Moll Flanders. Because, yeah, you see.
Did anybody in the audience know that?
Yes, somebody said yes.
You're going to get letters of complaint from the listeners for that one. Yeah. Lots of people wrote, good Lord, they were stupid.
That's what we normally get. But Roger's isn't stupid. Put your hands in your bag, Roger, because yours is a very sensible black bag.
Oh, gosh. It's very full. It's like Christmas. I can't look, can I?
No, you can't look.
A plug. Three-point plug. A what seems like a food mixer, no.
No.
It's electrical.
Mm-hmm.
It's part of the same thing, presumably.
Yeah, the plug is attached to the thing.
Electrical. If I press it, will it... My fingers...
No, quite so.
Right. Not unless there's a socket in there.
Please, I don't know. I'm a poet, not a bloody electrician.
You know how to plug a thing in. Is it an electric carver you got in there? Is that what it is?
No, it's not. There's no knife. And there's a pack of sweets.
Bag of sweets, yeah.
Bag of sweets.
Yep.
Bag of sweets. Get this down, Mark. Bag of sweets.
I'm writing it.
Something electrical. It's a bit like a shower curtain. Not quite. An item of woman's clothing.
An item... Oh, I don't know. It's been so long. petticoat.
Petticoat, yes.
Petticoat. Bag of sweets, petticoat.
Bag of sweets, petticoat, electrical
and,
thing.
And the electrical thing.
That you might use for flattening clothing.
It's ironing things.
Ironing things.
For ironing. It's ironing with petticoats. Lolita.
No.
No. Why would you iron petticoats?
It's almost a song by Oasis.
Oh, almost a song by Oasis. I know that. Look Back in Anger.
Look Back in Anger.
Very good, yeah.
Because he runs a sweet stall, doesn't he? Mm. He has a sweet stall.
And they're
and
always
they see
ironing.
Constantly they're, she's ironing petticoats.
Yeah.
Now, Rory, yours is even harder than that.
Oh, golly.
Yeah. Right. Put your hand inside the black bag.
Right, okay. Well, as I plunge my hand into the bag, it would be a vet. it's a sort of plastic flower, couldn't identify it.
Yeah.
Boxer matches.
Boxer matches.
And a banana.
Mm-hmm.
So a banana, a box of matches, and a flower of some sort.
It's foliage.
Foliage.
It's not a flower, it's foliage.
Oh, it's foliage.
Oh, right.
Shrubbery.
No, foliage.
Oh, right. So...
it's a leaf.
Foliage.
Yep.
Banana, and I'll just keep repeating them off and on and on until someone rescues me. And a box of matches.
Ah. Oh.
Go on then, Matt.
Talk to me.
Is it the Jungle Book?
It is.
Because foliage, as we call it foliage, but,
That's just
because I come from South London, Borderino. But the foliage, obviously the jungle.
Jungle.
The matches is the, orangutan who's obsessed with discovering the secret of fire.
Yep.
And bananas, which are a fruit which monkeys and apes find very popular.
Correct.
Oh.
Good. And finally, Merc, and I'll have to hurry you.
Oh, great. Okay, here we go.
Hand in the black bag.
Right, there's a boot. There's a football boot or a rugby boot of some kind. There's two of them, which is good. There's a tie, and there's something else. There's a packet of cigarettes, I think it is. I hope it is. It's a packet of cigarettes, a tie, and some football boots. There's football boots.
But they're not football boots. They're sporting boots.
They're sporting boots. Is it a long-distance runner?
No, we're thinking about a woman's sport rather than...
A woman's sport.
A woman.
Needlework. Sorry, what did I say? Was it a bad thing? Women's sport. Netball.
Hockey. Right.
Hockey, cigarettes and a tie. Hockey?
Centurions?
Hockey, is it Centurions?
Centurions, it is. Yeah, you see. And now, the last round. The jumble sale's nearly over, and if you haven't found your mate to miss the nylons, don't worry, there's still a chance to place a small ad in the Lonely Hearts column. In this round, our panellists dream up Lonely Hearts ads for lovesick literary types. Anybody got any, Mark?
Yeah, this is the Lonely Hearts for Moses. Wanted, partner, if you light my fire, I'm going to burn your bush.
And I was given Lassie and Biggles. It was Lassie. Lassie, late of Hollywood fame, seeks mate for jolly good game. Interested? Ring Canine 99. And here's Biggles. Biggles, hanging up goggles, wants giggles, jiggles, and mind-boggling wiggles, loop the loop and wizard prangs. No huns or time wasters, please.
Dillian Rory?
Mine's Narcissus from Narcissus and Goldman. I am an S. Non-smoking, ascetic, solitary, spiritually seeking monk would like to meet God. Must have good sense of humour and be omnipotent.
Any more? Right then, well, it's time to finish now with a poem entitled... Part of Wuthering Heights, rendered as the lyrics of the new Andrew Lloyd Webber musical, Heights. exclamation mark. Again, the good lyrics. Help Mr. Heathcliff take his boots off. La 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 la. His boots are covered in muddy stuff. La 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 la. So it just remains for me to thank Matt Thomas, Roger McGough, Dilly Keane and Rory Morton. It was researched by Felicity Goodall, devised and produced in Bristol by Mark Yobst, and presented by me, Ian McMillan. Goodbye.